Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert and new dad, Rick Graham. Well, welcome to the show, Daddy Rick. How are you doing? How does it feel to be a father? Do you have like newfound strength and newfound like knowledge, wisdom?
I don't think that's come quite yet. I'm waiting for that still. I feel a little exhausted mentally from everything. Sure. But it's been a crazy week with everything. So yeah, it's exciting though. I mean, yeah, just crazy stuff. And I know, you know, it's been this whole month's been crazy. Also closing on a house, getting a house at the same time. And wow. We were not expecting to do all this stuff at the exact same minute, but mm-hmm. Here we are now. And yeah, next week, hopefully, you know, we're all in our house together. Everyone's moved in and everyone's settled and we can, you know, go from there. But so far everything's been good. Yeah. You know, I know, also, former Pitcherless staffer Alex Fast had a crazy baby story as well last week.
Really?
Where his wife delivered on the side of the highway. Yeah, New Jersey. I know.
That's like a nightmare of mine.
Oh yeah, that's and he's like her and a state trooper, and yeah, they like just crazy stuff. I mean,
wow.
So yeah, it's been a wild week for me, for a lot of people, I guess, but yeah. We're here.
Wow.
And yeah, just waiting to, get her home. And we ended up in a hospital that we weren't even supposed to be in. And so it's a little bit, well, I guess all the hospitals from us are kind of far, but like, yeah, everyone there we didn't know anyone there. We didn't know any of the doctors or OBs, but everyone's been great. Everyone's been helpful. Everyone's awesome. Doing well. So yeah, it's been a trip. For
all
sure.
Right. Well, no. Congratulations. That's awesome. I had a pretty crazy week last week too. I went to my first bachelor party. We were on Lake Tahoe and it was 4th of July. Yeah. I have not had many friends get married.
Young.
Yeah. Well, sort of. Yeah. I'm definitely at the age where all the weddings are going to start happening, but yeah, it was pretty crazy. We're in Tahoe for 4th of July. So got to see fireworks on the lake and stuff. That was pretty cool. It was a little bit chilly and the traffic home was just absolutely ridiculous. It's like we were driving back to Sacramento from Tahoe. From Sacramento to Tahoe is about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours if there's a little bit of traffic. It took us to get back 6.5 hours. Yeah. No. We could have driven all the way to freaking Disneyland if we were going a different way. But yeah, it was ridiculous. I've never been in that much traffic. Luckily, I was in the back seat so I could rest my eyes a little bit and rest up for getting back into the swing of things with baseball. But yeah, it sounds like everybody had a crazy week last week. And we had a crazy week of relief pitchers as well, as there were just a boatload, which, you know, goes pretty well with my theme of being on a boat last week. But a boatload. Go. Of reliever transactions, as well as a ton of injuries, as teams are looking to take advantage of the few days off for the All-Star break by placing a bunch of guys on the IL that either could use a little rest or are dealing with injuries that they've been dealing with all year. And, you know, maybe it's not something that at another time of the year you'd waste 2 weeks on, but since you're getting a free week here, might as well go for it. You also got some call-ups of guys that are now past that July deadline where they get a full year of control if they're called up afterwards. So we get some, you know, not super top prospect relievers, but definitely some guys that have had some interesting numbers in the minors this year. So we'll spend a lot of time talking about transactions and injuries. Then we'll focus on the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks. And then we're going to look at the relievers that were selected to the All-Star game. Last week, we predicted which relievers would make the team. And so we'll compare the actual selections to the guys that we predicted, but, well, that won't take up the whole time. So we'll have plenty of time to talk about injuries and transactions. Let's jump right into the transactions, starting with your Boston Red Sox, who activated Giovanni Moran from the 15-day IL after missing a month with elbow inflammation. Tommy Canley was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. So they have another lefty to support Danny Coulomb and Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, for now, at least, you know, I mean, I could see this whole Red Sox bullpen could be available and traded at the deadline. I don't think I'd be surprised if anyone, like maybe Slayton would be the biggest surprise if he got moved. But because
he's got a 6 ERA.
He's got a 6 ERA. He's got team control. You're selling low if you are. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, Moran's been pitching one of the more underrated relievers, I feel like, in baseball this year. Mm-hmm. When he's healthy, or at least prior to the injury list or prior to the IL stint, he was started throwing harder. Not a big velocity guy from the left side anyway, but just, you know, throwing 94 plus was a big difference for him. He's got a really good changeup. Yeah, I wonder, again, he's like him and like Tyron Guerrero are just kind of popped up out of nowhere, or more or less the results have been out of nowhere and not expected for the Red Sox. So, you know, those are two guys I wonder. They do have a little team control left, but like maybe the Red Sox sell high on them. I don't know. They've won like 5 straight games in a row. Maybe they're going to wind up making a run here. I just don't know how they're going to do things offensively with the injuries and all that. And even the starting pitching staff's been hurt. So, but I don't know. I mean, if this Red Sox bullpen sticks together with Moran and Guerrero as being supplemental pieces to, if they keep Chapman and if they hang on to Whitlock, like there's something here with the Red Sox. And I think, yeah, Moran should be getting more high leverage use than Danny Couliam. I hope. I know, depending on where you're looking for depth charts, it looks like Couliam might be a little bit above Moran, but Moran's been so much better. And so there's more consistency and more upside there with him. So, yeah, I probably not someone you're targeting in holds yet, but if there are moves in this bullpen, if they lose two guys like Chapman and Whitlock, then everyone right. gets moved up, and Moran's probably on the holds radar at that point.
Totally. Yeah. And he's got upside for sure, especially in the strikeout department. I mean, he's jumped around a couple organizations, I guess just the Twins and the Red Sox, but they're is definitely potential in his arm. He's always had high swinging strike rates, high strikeout rates. It's just about throwing enough strikes, and looks like the Red Sox have been able to help him mitigate the free passes this year. So I definitely see the potential in Giovanni Moran, especially as you mentioned, if he's throwing 93 to 94 miles per hour, which usually he's a 92 mile per hour guy. So if he's throwing harder and he's not walking anybody, that's definitely exciting. And you're right to mention, you know, this is definitely something we'll talk about in a couple of weeks, but as the Red Sox ship guys out, who moves up that ladder? Who becomes the top holds options and closing options moving forward? Next, we'll talk about the Cubs, who selected the contract of Drew Pomeranz and optioned Jordan Wicks to the minors. The Cubs bullpen is in shambles right now, not really because of performance, mostly because of injury. And, you know, I think it's pretty evident if you're selecting the contract of Drew Pomeranz, who couldn't even handle his own in the Angels bullpen. He has a 5.40 ERA on the year with just a 14% strikeout rate, but he locked right in right away into that Cubs bullpen. He recorded a hold on Wednesday.
Yeah, he's already got a win. He's got a win and a hold so far. Nice. He was great last year in Chicago. It's, sometimes we just, you know, just a better fit there for whatever reason. That could be the case. So, as far as the lefties go there, I mean, Caleb Teelbar has been hit or miss since he came back from his IL stint. Velocity's been down for him. Stuff's overall been a little bit down. So that's concerning. And I mean, Ryan Rolls, I think Rolston's been pitching well for them. They don't really seem to have a ton of trust in putting him into high leverage situations. You know, just 2 holds on the year. So maybe Pomeranz could work his way into some hold situations with the Cubs. But yeah, they have a whole bullpen of guys on the IL right now that pretty much rival the same bullpen they have active right now. So
it's way better than the bullpen they have.
When guys get back, it's gonna be, yeah, I don't know if Pomeranz will stick around forever. So we'll see though. That's a long way. There's a lot of those guys that are out for a while, so we have a ways to go there, but Pomeranz is probably pretty safe for the time being.
Yeah, I checked on Palencia just to see if we had any news, and it looks like the Cubs will reevaluate him after the All-Star break. Yeah. So still a couple weeks away from Daniel Palencia returning for that Cubs bullpen. And I guess Trent Thornton is mixing into the closing situation now. We saw Jacob Webb get a couple saves this past week, but Trent Thornton got one with Webb pitching in the 8th inning. Actually, I think he pitched the 7th. He got the final out of the 7th. Yeah. and Trent Thornton got the save. He's been pretty good, but it's super reliant on balls in play, and that's not something I believe in. Trent Thornton, 12% strikeout rate on the year. That doesn't seem super sustainable. Right. That, yeah, you know, so, a sub 3% strikeout minus walk rate to go with a 2.60 ERA doesn't seem sustainable.
And the next very next day, they basically switched roles where Thornton mm-hmm. got the seventh and Webb got the ninth. I think more often than not, Webb's going to be getting the ninth.
Mm-hmm.
But I know they said that they're going to evaluate Palencia after the break, but I do think he'll be back by August or before August, it sounds like. I don't know, barring some sort of setback or whatnot. But yeah, I still think Webb's worth rostering for most leagues, but it's not going to – it won't be permanent. He'll be back at some – Palencia will be back at some point.
All right, now we'll talk about the Braves bullpen, who activated Danny Young from the 60-day IL. He's missed all season after undergoing Tommy John surgery. So he's a lefty who has performed fine in the past. He wasn't spectacular. I think he pitched for the Mets in 2025 and the Mets in 2024, and he was back with the Braves in 2023. He's never been a excellent arm, but he is somebody who has strikeout potential. We've seen him have strikeout rates north of 30%, and the Braves bullpen is definitely flush with left-handers, so I don't think Young is going to immediately become a holds option. However, his first outing, he did record a hold, so maybe I'm going to want to eat my word. So with Young back, the Braves optioned James Karinchak to the minors, which was confusing until they recalled him back from the minors, because Karinchak has pitched pretty well, and mostly because he's not walking too many guys, but definitely has got a little bit downhill since he opened the season well. And I was also surprised to see Daisbell Hernandez released, and not because of his results recently. Right. Me too. I just remember how lucky he was last year, just the luckiest pitcher in baseball, but his command is just terrible, and it hasn't gotten any better. 18% walk rate at AAA this year. So Daisbell Hernandez is now a free agent.
Yeah, I the thing, I mean, Danny Young is pretty good when he's healthy. An underrated lefty. And the one thing that kind of worries me about him being there is, he's the third lefty for now, but like, does this mean Dylan Dodd's going to get optioned? Because he still has an option. They're obviously not going to option Dylan Lee. But like, Dylan Dodd's been awesome so far. He's like, he's legit. He'd be a top lefty in a lot of bullpens. But if, you know, once Suarez comes back and, you know,
Kinley,
does that potentially move Dylan Dodd down to AAA? That would be a bummer. But yeah, there's other, I mean, Victor Medeiros probably isn't going to last long there. J.R. Richie's, you know, I don't know what his exact role is going to be there. So,
right.
There's hopefully room for Dodd to stay around, because he's just been pitching too well. This bullpen just 1-8 just continues to be, it's really only at this point only rivals like the Dodgers in terms of depth that they can roll out 7 or 8 guys that would be set up guys in a lot of bullpens around the league right now. So Danny Young, and it just, if he's healthy and he's been pitching well so far, just like another piece for them that can be a pretty big impact when they need him to be. Well, if not, he's just gonna, you know, be a middle relief mop-up guy, but when they need, you know, when everyone else is down, he you can go to him for a hold in the seventh inning and you don't really lose a step.
Exactly. He's one of those perfect guys for a bullpen with a lot of depth where you don't have to necessarily rely on him, but you can, and he's got so much upside that, you know, if he breaks out and he figures everything out, he throws more strikes or whatever he needs to do, then he just deepens the bullpen. Right, exactly. Yeah. This is like the perfect bullpen to take chances on guys like that, where you don't need them to be
what the Dodgers have been guys. Doing. Yeah,
right. Just take a chance on anybody, and if they work out, you know, better for you.
Yeah,
it's like the Mets. They'll try out Craig Kimbrel, and it's like, okay, Craig Kimbrel's cool if you can use him in like the fifth or sixth inning, not as like your eighth inning top setup guy where you need him to get the job done. But the Braves have definitely set themselves up where they don't have to rely on guys like Karinchak and Young to be those guys in the eighth inning. They can use them earlier in innings, and ultimately they're going to have a pretty tough bullpen to beat. They just really need that offense to wake up so that they can push themselves through to the postseason. I think they got a pretty decent hold right now on the
division. Get another starter too, but yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. They'll certainly be movers at the deadline. I think so. They just need Acuna back and they should be fine. I think they'll get Schwellenbach and Smith-Shaver back in the second half of the season and maybe Spencer Strider at some point. So there are some potential reinforcements, none that I think are guaranteed to be good, but the Braves, they got a lot of talent. It hasn't really come together in full for a full season over the past couple of years, but definitely a lot of potential. A bullpen without a lot of potential is the A's bullpen, and they activated Mark Leiter Jr. from the 15-day IL. He missed about 2 weeks, 3 weeks with a hip impingement. So with Leiter Jr. returning, Jeff Hartlieb and Matt Crook were designated for assignment. Crook was ultimately claimed by the Washington Nationals, but Mark Leiter Jr. back in this A's bullpen. And it's been hard to parse what the plan is here because, you know, they have Elvis Alvarado doing well, but he's struggled recently. He's been allowing runs recently. They haven't had a lot of save opportunities. It's unclear who the top guys are, who are the top hold options, who you should be targeting for saves. I mean, what do you make of this A's bullpen with Mark Leiter Jr. returning?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I hope that he doesn't factor into too much of the, you know, leverage work here. Even with certainly question marks, I still think, I mean, Alvarado hasn't been perfect lately, but he's still been, I think he's been better than a lot of guys there. I mean, pretty much anyone there as far, and right. At least there's hope there. There, like, we see the upside, we see the stuff is real. So I would, and they continue to like pitch him in the sixth inning down five runs. He had like two saves. He had like one bad save opportunity and then it's just over. And that's kind of what they did to Jack Perkins too. And I don't know, like, it would be fun if they gave, at least they're giving Perkins some sort of leash in the rotation now, I guess. But like, give Alvarado like a legit chance. And I know they're battling for a playoff spot, and it's, you know, but like, it's not like they have these superior options behind him. And Hogan Harris has been up and down all year. He's been mostly good, but like, there's still like, he's not really a closer. And like, Luis Medina is not the answer. Mason Barnett's not the answer. Leiter obviously isn't. I mean, Sterner has been up and down as well. Just would like to see some continuity and Alvarado getting a chance to, you know, make some mistakes and still hold on to a role there. See how he grows with that. Unless you're going to go out and make an addition, a significant addition to this bullpen, there's no one here that really rivals Alvarado's skill set and upside. So
that seems super unlikely because they have really fallen off in the past month or so. They're now 41-52, six games back of the Mariners in the AL West. So they'd really have to turn it on over the next week or two to be in consideration to be buyers at the deadline. Yeah. I don't really see that happening, but you're right. There's not many options here, and I would more like to see them sell guys like Leiter Jr. and Sterner or whoever is going to be a free agent soon and see if they can supplement this bullpen with some potential for the future. But right now, yeah, it's like Alvarado and, I don't know, Medina's cool because he throws hard, but it's empty velocity and he doesn't have breakers to support it. So it doesn't really feel like there's a lot going on here. And with the downturn in performance overall by the team, that means a lot of fewer save opportunities. And if Alvarado's not taking advantage of all of them, then it's rough. It's not going well in that A's bullpen
right now. It's become very similar to like the Angels bullpen, where it's like there's some upside in some guys there, but they're not getting consistent save chances. So it's really frustrating to roster.
Right. And then they're taking away the chances from each other. So, and then you got Sam Bachman blowing up for five runs and it's like, what's going on? Who do I trust? Who can I trust? Maybe just nobody. Just avoid those bullpens, the Angels and the A's. Let's move over to the Yankees, who recalled Angel Chavilla from the minors and optioned Brendan Beck to the minors. Chavilla has pitched exceptionally in a small sample size this year in the majors, 1.93 ERA. And it hasn't been just contained in the majors as well as he's pitched well in the minor leagues at AAA with a 1.08 ERA. And I know we've been excited about Chavilla in the past. His changeup and sinker combination are pretty cool, but I just don't see a path to him contributing in this Yankees bullpen, although I'd be very happy to see that happen.
And there are some opportunity in this bullpen, but I don't think Chavis. I don't know what. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned his changeup because I was looking at his numbers and looking at his stuff numbers since he's been called up, and obviously it's a small sample, but like his changeup looks terrible now. Oof. And I'm like we always talked about how good his changeup was, but like it's not mm-hmm. it's grading out really really poorly. And yeah, he's got velocity on his fastball, but it, like you talk about empty velocity, it's yeah, it's just there's he throws 98, but it's pretty. I mean, gets a little bit of arm side run on it, but
it's a sinker.
Yeah, it's really a sinker. Probably it's
17 inches of horizontal break.
Probably needs to be reclassified.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know what's going on with the changeup because that's. You know, I thought, yeah, maybe like a sinker changeup guy could work for sure. But yeah, the changeup's taking a step back for him this year. So we'll see. A small sample size. Maybe it's just a couple of like weird, glitchy outings for him with the changeup this year. But yeah, maybe, you know, probably look at AAA numbers, see how his changeup's been grading out. Cause at the mm-hmm. major league level, it has not been great.
Yeah. Eighth percentile PLV, not great. It's like, I think it probably has to do with that transition from Colorado to New York, because I know that Coors really affects seam shifted wake pitches, which changeups are, that's just what they are. They're just seam shifted wake pitches. So if you have a different movement profile on the pitch, it's going to alter dramatically when you come down to sea level. I could totally see how that could make it a plus pitch turn to a minus pitch, but I don't know. It is weird. So maybe it looks different in the minor leagues and this is just a small sample size blip. But
yeah,
I mean, we've seen potential from Chavis even pitching for the Rockies. So if he can figure things out at sea level, then that would be cool for the Yankees bullpen. But right now they're not really in dire need for Chavis. I mean, they would be in dire need of somebody to step up, but I don't know if Chavis is going to be that guy. Doval has really, really struggled recently. Yeah. I love Cutter is King on Twitter. He's always posting the John Boy reaction to when they acquired Doval via trade from the Giants last year. We got Camilo Doval, and they're like jumping out of their chairs and stuff. And just you respond to a home run from off Doval with that every single time.
It's pretty good. I know that that has not worked out for them, and it's been super frustrating because I mean we're talking about Doval all of a sudden, but like frustrating for him to say the least, because every time it looks like he's made a change that's going to work, it just like falls back. It's just been two steps forward, four steps back for him all year. So fortunate for Doval, but yeah, the Yankees need something behind Bednar. That's going to be something they need to address at the deadline for sure.
Yeah, you think you see like a repeat of last year when they went out and just got everybody?
Yeah,
it was cool.
If the closer, I mean, at least Bednar worked out for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder, like, I don't, yeah, I mean, I don't even know. I think the Cardinals aren't going to sell, right? But, like if for whatever reason, like a Riley O'Brien or something makes sense for someone with, like, some contract, that seems to be the Yankees, like, how they like to operate at the deadline, especially for relievers. They like guys who have some term left, and I'm just trying to think of guys with like a couple years left on their contract they could go after. But yeah, it's probably going to be a name outside the box who's like a Doval and even Bednar to a degree last year. So yeah, that's definitely a need for them though. I was gonna say a lefty, but it probably need two arms, probably a righty and a lefty, to be honest.
Okay. All right. Let's pay attention to that Yankees bullpen as we approach the trade deadline. Our last transaction related news is Evan Phillips, who was activated from the 60-day IL. He's missed all season following Tommy John surgery, which he underwent last June. And Paul Gervais was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. But Phillips should be a key member of this Dodgers bullpen moving forward. He has been for the last few years, and he showed up, struck out a couple of batters, and I think he's going to be pretty solid for the Dodgers as long as his stuff isn't super diminished from where it was at pre-injury.
He's throwing like it was up like 2 miles per hour in his first outing, and that could be like some adrenaline from that first game back. Sometimes that we do see that. So I don't know, has he pitched since? I think
just the one.
Yeah, so maybe he pitches tonight. We'll get a more accurate reading. But either way, yeah, stuff looked great from him. it's just really hard. That bullpen, again, is just so, so deep. Like Edgardo Henriquez making the jump he has made. Brock Stewart's looked better his last couple outings. Will Klein's been pretty good all year. And now all of a sudden, like, Will Klein's like out of the out of the mix for holds potentially with the rest. It's just, I mean, I don't know. It's really frustrating because all these guys are pitching well and I want to rank them high in holds, like for holds rankings. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know. There's no consistency outside of like, you know, we know Scott's going to get the bulk of the saves and Vessi is pretty consistent for holds. But other than that, like, especially from the right side, these guys are awesome, but I don't know if they're going to get holds or not. So they're, it's not a problem to have if you're a Dodgers fan or if you work for the Dodgers, I guess. But yeah, mm-hmm. it's, and they still have other guys. At least Edwin Diaz is going to come back.
Right. Like, I was going to ask about him. He faced live hitters last weekend and he's still recovering from surgery to remove loose bodies from his elbow, which he underwent in late April. So my question is, you know, obviously we don't know exactly when Diaz is going to come back, but what do you do if you're rostering Tanner Scott? Is this a guy that you're looking to shop around? Do you think the Dodgers allow him to split save opportunities to sort of take the pressure off Diaz returning from the IL? Or do you think maybe Scott just holds the role and they just, you know, ease Diaz into that because Scott's been really great this year?
I think it depends on how deep your league is. And you're probably not going to be able to trade Tanner Scott for a whole lot because people are going to know that, you know, Diaz is coming back. You're trying to, you know,
get out of a smart league.
Yeah.
What if you're in a dumb league?
So I think you're best off holding on to him through, you know, at least through the first week or two of Diaz returning, seeing how things play out. Even if Diaz is getting all the saves, there still could be some value of Scott in the way he's been pitching this year. You could still get some wins, a couple saves here and there when Diaz isn't available. But yeah, I do wonder. I mean, and even in New York, there was times where Diaz would pitch the eighth inning based on matchups.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if they kind of go into, you know, Diaz is going to get the ninth, but if there's three righties due up in the eighth and like three lefties in the ninth for whatever reason, maybe they do, you know, shift things around a little bit. So,
right. I mean, the Dodgers win enough that they could have enough save opportunities for both of them.
There's been a lot of times where Tanner Scott's had, you know, thrown back-to-back days and he's not available. And then, you know, Vessi has had a couple saves when Scott hasn't been available. So, yeah, that's going to be Scott when Diaz comes back. So he's giving you a good ratio of strikeouts and saves here and there. Then, yeah, that works out. Gives you something.
All right. Well, now we can talk about some of the injuries that occurred across the past week and a half. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen discussing relief pitcher injuries from the past week or so. We'll start off with the Royals and I'll hold my Matt Quatraro rant until we get to the next section. But they placed Connor Siebold on the 15-day IL with a lat strain. Jose Cuas was selected from the minors, subsequently optioned to the minors, and then recalled back from the minors. So Jose Cuas remains in the Royals bullpen. Connor Siebold is out. I don't think there's any fantasy relevance in that move. Do you have any analysis for those two or should we move on?
Not really. I mean, Cuas sometimes looks interesting. But I don't know if he's gonna, you know, someone in very, very deep leagues to maybe monitor, but that's about it. Yeah.
All right. Sticking in the AL Central, Will Vest was placed on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. Bo Brieski was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but the fact that Will Vest has a 6.08 ERA on the year is sort of irrelevant because this is a huge blow to this bullpen that has been heavily reliant on him because you don't really have a lot of guys stepping up to replace him. Drew Anderson's been solid. Cal Finnegan has good results, but I don't think the projections really favor him moving forward based on his strikeout minus walk rate. And there's very few righties outside of that you can really trust in this bullpen behind Kenley Jansen. So this might be tough for the Tigers to weather without Will Vest.
Yeah, I mean, Finnegan's kind of been turning things around, but I still don't feel very comfortable if he were to be needed as the closer if Jansen gets traded or he gets hurt himself again. And, you know, Drew Anderson's shown some things, but just, yeah, again, consistency has not been there for him. So, again, same thing with Vest, consistency wasn't there. And that ERA is inflated by, like, two or three really bad outings. But other than that, I mean, it's those outings count, especially if you're in a roto league, but like in weekly leagues, you know, head to head leagues, Fest has been good more often than not. So it hurts for Holds Leaks there. And yeah, I would imagine he would have taken over the closer role in August if Chanson gets moved. So yeah, now it might be Kyle Finnegan, who, again, like showing some signs of getting better, but it's not, we're not excited about Kyle Finnegan again. It was exciting for a second with Kyle Finnegan, and now it's not again. And it is what it is.
Maybe Jacob Wagyusback can step up, because I've always had a little bit of a soft spot for him after seeing what he was doing in Asia before coming over in 2024.
It's one of those name guys too. Like,
right.
The name sticks with you. So yeah, mm-hmm. He actually does. He doesn't look bad. It's just,
no, he is. He's not like funky.
A closer. Yeah. He's I don't know. He's an interesting arm, but I'm not sure what you really do with him.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, we'll see. He's been pitching well thus far, but the strikeouts aren't coming. There's a lot of whiffs though. So maybe there's some potential for Jacob Wagyusback. We'll see what the Tigers do with him. We'll move over to the Padres and talk about Jason Adam, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a shoulder strain. Herman Marquez was activated from the 15-day IL in a corresponding move to join the Padres rotation. But Jason Adam out, he joins Jeremiah Estrada on the IL. Tough for the Padres right now. I think they'll be okay. They got one of the deepest bullpens in all of baseball, but I think this will put a lot of pressure on Bradley Rodriguez to be the top right-handed option behind Mason Miller. And I think the injury also sort of explains Jason Adams' struggles this year, which I think all reside in his put-away rate, because he's got a lot of whiffs. He's not walking too many guys. It's just 16% strikeout rate doesn't make sense for how many whiffs he's getting.
Yeah, his fastball is definitely not the same, or it hasn't been the same as it used to be. And even I think it was the changeup hasn't been as good either, but the slider is still great for him. The slider's getting a ton of whiffs. And he, over the last week or so, he started transitioning to be like just kind of leaning on his slider and not even throwing his fastball here and like every now and then. So definitely different Jason Adam we're used to. And yeah, maybe it's the knee or, I don't know, or the shoulder, especially since it does sound like it's a pretty severe shoulder strain. He's not going to be back until maybe August at the earliest. So, again, with Jeremiah Estrada already down, that's, they have some depth there. Bradley Rodriguez is back at least. So you have him and Adrian Morejon to lean on in front of Mason Miller. So. One more injury, though, that thing that gets really, really dicey. And I know Yuki Matsui's picked up a bigger role, and Matsui's been more good than bad this year. So that's been a nice, find for them, I guess, the fact that he's been able to pitch well this year. So, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully it sounds like Estrada might be back soon. Hopefully he's healthy again, because his first two stints before going on the IL both times, just he didn't look right. Hopefully this longer IL stint for Estrada gets him right, and they're going to need him. I don't know what, I keep hearing Mason Miller possibly being traded. Like the last 2 days, it's just been, is Mason Miller on the trade block, which would seem crazy to me, but I don't know. Who knows? We'll see. If he's on the trade block, then I'd imagine Adrian Morejon is too. And the return for those two guys could be pretty, maybe it would be worth it for them to trade.
Put those two guys on the,
oh man, those guys instantly jumped to like the top of the available reliever board. So I don't know.
Yeah, feel like the Yankees, for Mason Miller, Adrian Morejon, I'm feeling like Clint Frazier and Miguel Andujar.
I knew
maybe.
That was coming. How did I know that? I wasn't sure if you. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Jason Adams. Interesting. You're right about the fastball velocity coming down. The changeup velocity hasn't changed, but it's certainly worse from the past. But it's like he's got a lower walk rate, which I think you'd think, okay, he's more reliant on balls in play. So that means fewer two strike counts, right? But that's not the case. He's got a higher two strike rate, the highest two strike rate of his career since 2020, which if you discount that, it's the highest ever, 33.6% two strike rate. So he's reaching two strike counts often. that would mean, okay, he's going to have a lot of opportunities to strike batters out, but we see the 16% strikeout rate and you think, okay, maybe that's because he's not finding whiffs like he used to, but we got a 15% swinging strike rate, which not his best, but still elite in that category. It's in the 84th percentile. So I think it all just comes down to put away rate where he gets to two strike counts often and he's just not finding those whiffs there. 12% put away rate, the lowest of his career, almost 10% down from last year and over 10% down from the three previous years. So definitely looks like Adam is just struggling in those two strike counts to put batters away. And honestly, I don't think it's a stuff thing because he's still getting whiffs outside of that. And maybe it's just all on the slider, but still 15% swinging strike rate on the changeup. And maybe he just needs to throw more sliders and two strike counts, and that'll be the key to get Jason Adam back on track. Or maybe he just needs to get his shoulder healthy again and he'll start doing well. Let's go over to the Orioles, who placed Ryan Helsley on the 15-day IL with elbow discomfort, another injury for Helsley, and definitely a little bit concerning considering he spent over a month on the IL with an elbow injury previously. So definitely scary. It looks like Tyler Wells got the first two save opportunities, and I don't know. Is he the guy? Anthony Nunez got recalled from the minors in a corresponding move, but how much faith do you have in Tyler Wells to hold this role? Or is there somebody else you're putting your money on in the Orioles bullpen?
Yeah, it did look like he might be the guy there. And then he pitched, was it today? He pitched the eighth, and then Kittredge came in for the ninth for the save. I think that might have been matchup based because the Wells got the top of the order in the eighth. So there might be one of those, you know, Wells is going to get the best part of the order in the eighth or the ninth. And, you know, Kittredge for now is, again, Kittredge probably gets traded or could get traded. I'm guessing the Orioles are going to be sellers the way they've been playing. So, but yeah, I mean, Tyler Wells has been pitching really well. For the past month or so, starting in June, he's been great. Not a big velocity guy, but commands his stuff well, has good shape on his fastball. And I, Rico Garcia has been trending down. The way that they like using Yanni Cano is more of a fireman to get like tough righty out here and there. We don't know if, Felix Bautista could return this year. It's probably not until late September, if at all. I don't know. There's no reason for them to rush him back. Right. And it sounds like, Helsley's getting a second opinion. That's never good news. It sounds like he's potentially headed towards surgery and missing, next year plus. So
yikes.
That could open the door for Wells to be the closer the rest of the way. It's definitely makes him more interesting than a guy like Jacob Webb or Alvarado or any of these other interim E type closers, because Wells actually has a little bit of upside and potentially a role for the rest of the year. So yeah, I think I would, I put Wells at 18 yesterday for closer ranks, because behind him it's kind of bleak anyway. But yeah, it worries me that they're going to just mix and match. They love Andrew Kittredge. He's been so bad this year. There's not even really a lot to get excited about because the stuff's not the same as it was last year, but they keep throwing Andrew Kittredge into these high leverage spots. So I don't think he's going anywhere unless he's traded. So
yeah,
if Kittredge is moved, then, Wells could have a longer leeway there in that close role.
It's weird that they didn't go back to Rico Garcia. I mean, they relied on him for months the first time that Ryan Helsley was out, and he hasn't been terrible. Definitely has regressed a lot since he was super lucky early in the season.
Has disappeared. I don't know.
Yeah.
The velocity velocity and shapes kind of disappeared on his fastball to the point where, he's not even throwing it. He's definitely not throwing it as much as he used to, but I think there was a game recently he didn't throw it at all. He's kind of been going changeup, slider. When I was excited about his fastball at the beginning of the year, going into the season, this dude's got an unbelievable fastball shape and throws 95, 96. But yeah, it's been a weird last month for Garcia and Dave. Yeah, but I am surprised how he had two questionable outings and the Orioles are just you're not a high leverage guy for us anymore.
Right.
Now he's pitching the ninth inning down five. And it's been weird how they've been using him this year since he had a couple bad outings.
Yeah,
but Kittredge has been terrible, and they're just like, no, you're getting the save opportunity. I don't know.
And you wonder why they're in last place, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely keep an eye on Rico Garcia, just considering how they used him earlier this season. But probably put the money on Tyler Wells right now since he got those first two saves. But yeah, definitely worth keeping an eye on that Orioles bullpen. Let's go to the Rangers, who placed Jacob Junis on the 15-day IL with a hip impingement. They activated Chris Martin from the 15-day IL in a corresponding move after he missed over a month with a shoulder impingement. And they selected the contract of Ben Peoples, who's a 25-year-old right-handed pitcher who pitched to a 2.39 ERA at AAA with a 1.09 whip, a 30% strikeout rate, and a 14% walk rate. They optioned Winston Santos to the minors in a corresponding move to make room for Ben Peoples. Any analysis on Ben Peoples? Did you know about him prior to the call-up? And how do you think this setup situation in Texas shakes out without Jacob Junis?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know much about Peoples. I saw he threw yesterday, so I looked into him. Fastball, like pretty average, maybe above average fastball slider guy. Like nothing really sticks out as like wow, but it doesn't seem, you know, you could do worse as far as, you know, back end of the or back part of your bullpen goes. But yeah, missing. I mean, Chris Martin coming back. I don't know what to expect. I don't think the Rangers expect a whole lot from him. I think, you know, just if you can get some decent innings from him and mop up duty, sure. It looks like Peyton Gray's turned into their top setup guy. He's deserved it. He's been pitching well. Fastball velocity's gone up for him. That was kind of the one thing that had been holding him back earlier in the year when he got called up. But the changeup's good. Fastball velocity's better for him. And then, yeah, Tyler Alexander is still kicking around. Hasn't done anything to lose leverage spots. So, this is a team that, like, it always surprises me how well, like, they're in first place in the AL West, right? So,
that's crazy.
I know. It's like, I doesn't every time, because anyone I roster on this team,
it's because the AL West is terrible. Like, they're 500.
Yeah. But you got to imagine the Astros and Mariners do make some sort of push or something, you know. They're better than how they've been performing overall this year. And the Rangers, I know they need to go out and make like a significant move to their bullpen, which they never do. Maybe this is the year they actually go get a bullpen piece. The year they won the World Series, they went out and got Aroldis Chapman, so maybe they do it again. I don't know.
Who knows?
There's definitely a need there for a bullpen piece for them. I mean, the rotation could hold its own. The lineup when healthy is probably fine, especially for the AL West. But just go. They really need a reliever there because Peyton Gray and Jacob Junis, even when he is pitching, he was pitching well for most of the season. But that's not a guy you want to rely on in the eighth inning in an October playoff game. Like
no.
And poor Jacob Latz. I mean, Latz has gotten a nice break this past week, not pitching. Yeah. So that's needed. That's good. Probably goes into the All-Star. Maybe he'll pitch this weekend. I don't know. But yeah, Latz needs to be healthy for them because he's the only guy they have right now that is what you can really trust at this point.
Right. There's definitely potential. And Peyton Gray, I don't know if it's intentional, but he's got a 90th percentile low location on his fastball, but the fastball comes with a 74th percentile 1.3 HAVA, which with that flat attack angle, you want to go upstairs with that pitch. I don't know if he just doesn't have the command to do that, but definitely weird to see him throwing so many low fastballs when that pitch would do really well if he was able to pull off the BSB. You know, I've been using a different terminology for BSB. I've been calling it the bunk bed approach, where you have, you know, fastballs in the top bunk and you got secondaries in the bottom bunk.
Okay. Yeah.
I feel like if you're talking to a non pitcherless crowd, that comes across clearer than saying BSB or Blake Snell blueprint. I don't think everybody knows.
Yeah. The Blake Snell, especially since that was years ago with Blake Snell.
Right. Although, I don't even know if he does that anymore.
I don't even know where Blake Snell's been this year. Yeah.
Injured.
Yeah. So, no, all right. I like it. Yeah.
So in 2010 World Series fashion, we'll go from the Rangers to the Giants and talk about Matt Gage, who was placed on the 15-day IL with an elbow strain. That's another injury for Gage, who just spent some time on the IL. Spencer Bivens was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. The Giants also claimed Eric Sarantola off waivers from the Royals. Shout out 2014 World Series. And Ryan Walker was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move to Carson Wisenhunt, getting called up for a start today. So a little bit of a shakeup in the Giants bullpen, but I don't think it really changes the save situation at all.
No, I didn't realize they got, I like kind of like Sarantola.
Yeah, me too.
So that's not a bad claim for them. Yeah, Gage was at one point their best lefty. It's been a revolving door between him and Eric Walker or
Eric Miller.
Warren Walker. It's just like generic guys who just aren't very good. I thought Walker might get DFA'd after last night. I guess he still has options. They're not going to give up on him yet, but like,
sure.
It's just, he's fallen off a cliff with him. His stuff is terrible now. I don't know if there's an injury or something, but yeah, he's not the guy he was in 2024. It's not even close. So maybe another team can get him in the lab and work on something. But yeah, his days as being the closer are probably over. But yeah, Sarantola is interesting. Bivens has been pitching well, I guess, since he came up. They really need, just trying to find any sort of help behind Caleb Killian, who Killian himself hasn't been, he's been hit or miss. So,
right. Yeah,
the bullpen continues to be a question.
Bad. Yeah. Well, yeah, I can answer that question. It's bad for sure.
I want Dylan Smith to be good.
Me too.
Not there yet. Yeah.
No, it's not much going for that Giants bullpen right now. Let's talk about the Pirates bullpen. They placed Evan Sisk on the 15-day IL with elbow inflammation. Hunter Stratton was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. Sisk was definitely underrated. He's been great this year. 2.23 ERA, 28% strikeout rate. Definitely one of the top lefties in this bullpen, but they got plenty of good lefties in the Pirates bullpen. Gregory Soto, Mason Montgomery, both of whom have struggled over the past month. So with Sisk out, I think we could see some struggles from the Pirates bullpen. And if they had performed better across the past month, I would say maybe they should supplement this bullpen. But they're at 500. They're 12 games back in the Central. I think we're more likely to see the Pirates selling than buying.
And unfortunately, I don't even know what they like. What do they have to sell that's of interest to others? I mean, Santana. I mean, Dennis Santana is probably going to get DFA'd soon as well. Mm-hmm. Gregory Soto had some appeal at one point, but he's really been bad lately and lost the closer role now. So I don't know what they can sell. Yeah, the bullpen. I thought the bullpen could have been a strength at one point, but yeah. Hopefully, Mason Montgomery again. Had a rough last month or so, but the last week's been much better for Montgomery. Can we just get some consistency with them? And even if we don't get consistency with them, given the fact that there's no alternative options in this bullpen, maybe it's just time to give Montgomery a chance to be the closer and see how that works out. I'm assuming he's in the mix to be their long-term option in the role. So let's see how he does from July through the rest of the year. I mean, he pitched a sixth the other day, and then Santana came in a tie game in the eighth. I don't know why we're still trusting Dennis Santana at this point of the year. Frustrating bullpen. And Sisk was sneakily one of the best options that they had. He's really more of a left-handed specialist than than a Mason Montgomery. You can get lefties and righties, but Sisk had been awesome for them. So it's a big loss. And yeah, now you have your two lefties really aren't like big lefty out guys. They're just like hard throwing, you know, traditional relievers. So, we'll see what happens moving forward. But this bullpen has been more frustrating than I was hoping it would be, at the beginning of the year.
Let's stick in the NL Central and go to the Brewers bullpen, where Joel Kunal was placed on the 15-day IL with a shoulder impingement. Craig Yoho was
100 miles per hour.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't going too well either. He was not pitching better than he was with the A's. Definitely throwing faster, more. None of it worked. I think even his strikeouts were down. The ERA was up. It was not really working out. That one outing really got us excited. But hey, Craig Yoho back in the Brewers bullpen as a replacement for Kunal. And I don't think he has any more options left. Yo, no, he's still got two options. How? Who makes these rules? Somebody got to – we're gonna go into a lockout because I want fewer options for baseball.
They've brought up the options are a thing that have been discussed on the table.
Thank you.
It is a confusing thing. I would have to look into it. But, yeah, you have – I forget how many options you're allowed per season before you – yeah. I don't know. It's another discussion for another time. But Yo is back. Hopefully for a little while this time. I mean, he hasn't been great, but he hasn't done anything really to you know earn to, or to be demoted for. So, you know, I still question about how good his fastball is going to be. But the changeup's obviously good, and yeah, just hopefully maybe just getting a chance to settle into a role consistently and with the Brewers bullpen would you know let him kind of take off, because you know outside of Uribe and McGill you have Grant Anderson has looked a lot better lately. He's throwing harder, but the other right-handed options, it's Chad Patrick and Craig Yoho, so you know there's definitely a spot for Yoho there.
Yeah, fingers crossed that Craig Yoho has that breakout second half we've been waiting for. Let's go to the Rockies bullpen, and this is exciting, Rick. Not the injury part. Seth Halverson was placed on the 15-day IL with shoulder inflammation, but Jordan Romano is back. He was selected from the minors, and he's landed in the perfect spot for Jordan Romano being the closer for the Rockies. He got two saves this past week. I couldn't believe it. They saw one outing from him last Saturday and they were like, that's it. I'm sold. Jordan Romano is the closer. Back-to-back saves. He's doing well. Don't get fooled though. If you're a fantasy manager, you do not want to ride with Jordan Romano.
Yeah. And just avoid this bullpen forever and always. yeah. And even I'm like, yeah, he's got back-to-back saves. He's pitched well. Maybe there's something. No, there's nothing there. There's nothing to get excited about, or there's nothing interesting happening. He started off well with the Angels this year too, before everything imploded. So yeah, I'm sure we're due for a pretty bad meltdown from him in the coming weeks, unfortunately. Right. So just avoid the Rockies situation. Even Senzatella's fallen apart too. There's nothing good here.
No, it's not looking good in Colorado. Let's go to the Cardinals bullpen, who placed Max Ragic on the 15-day IL with elbow discomfort. He was then subsequently transferred to the 60-day IL, so not looking good for Max Ragic. Gordon Graceffo was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move, and the Cardinals selected the contract of Luis Gastelum, who's a 24-year-old righty who's pitched to a 2.27 ERA at AAA with a 0.98 whip, a 28% strikeout rate, and a 10% walk rate. Jared Schuster was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Graceffo's pretty fine. And do you have any take on Gastelum? Did you know about him before? That's an interesting name.
A little bit. Nothing really sticks out. He throws, I think, like four pitches, just nothing. Everything is average or worse. Nothing too exciting there. But yeah, this bullpen again, after their top four or five, I kind of have some trust in Justin Brewer at this point. But like after their top five, it's very just a revolving door at this point. So, we'll see. Nothing worth chasing there.
All right, let's go to the Phillies bullpen, who had two IL placements. Lou Trevino, who is now Lou Trevino III, was placed on the 15-day IL with a thoracic muscle spasm, and lefty Tanner Banks was placed on the 15-day IL with a forearm strain. Luckily, they got back a pretty significant reinforcement in Brad Keller, as he was activated from the 15-day IL after spending 4 weeks on the IL with forearm tendonitis. Chase Shugart was also recalled from the minors in a corresponding move to those IL placements. So with Banks and Trevino out, we get Keller back into being one of the top setup options for the Phillies.
Yeah, allegedly. I hate that. But yeah.
Why do you hate it? Because it Jonathan knocks down Bolin, Kirk Ring and Bolin? Yeah.
Bolin. I mean, Jonathan Bolin, man, I just need... I do think we have some sort of definitions of roles in that Phillies bullpen. And they've been using Bolin kind of as that old school Jeff Hoffman fireman, you know, get the last out of an inning. If the base runner's on, just have Bolin come in and strike out whoever it is, because his strikeout.
I thought he's supposed to, if he's doing the Jeff Hoffman, he comes and he gives up the home run.
Yeah, I'm talking about Philly's Jeff Hoffman.
I know, I'm joking.
The good Jeff Hoffman.
Right.
In a role that suited him better. But yeah, and that's, I mean, maybe Bullen, this is his best role, where he's just, mm-hmm. you know, gets that big out to end an inning, pumping 99 yeah. plus. But yeah.
Dope.
Yeah. Keller has not been as good as he looked last year.
Mm-hmm.
Partially, it could be the injury. I don't know. But yeah, just very mediocre stuff from him. Kirkering hasn't been as great. He's been kind of Jekyll and Hyde as well. I think Kirkland's trying to figure out how to best, sequence to get right. strikeouts. Cause you know, everyone's looking for his sweeper, cause it's his best pitch, but the fastball started getting more strikes, more swing and miss for him. Cause you know, hitters are sitting on that sweeper and
right.
yeah, I think that's just going to be going back and forth, seeing how hitters adjust to him. But I know Alvarado's been terrible. So even as the top lefty, he gets knocked down, and I just hope Jonathan Bullen is able to stick into some sort of leverage role and gets holds or wins or whatever, because he deserves it. He's been just lights right. out for them.
I mean, Don Mattingly's smart enough. I think he'll see, you know, Bullen's clearly the second best reliever in that bullpen.
His stuff is nuts. Yeah. Still think he could be a good starter eventually, but I don't know. That doesn't seem to be happening this year.
I mean, the Phillies don't really need it right now. I know they're relying on Alan Ronhell. I was struggling with how to pronounce that name the other day. I had to look it up. It's always the best choice. Just look it up. Baseball Reference is really good for that. Let's stick in the NL East. Austin Warren was placed on the 15-day IL with a forearm strain. Xavion Curry was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. There's a name that was fun for the Guardians. He wasn't necessarily good. The Mets also selected the contract of Dan Hammer. That's another fun
name.
28-year-old righty who's pitched at AA and AAA this year, recording a 2.16 ERA, a 1.26 whip, a 26% strikeout rate, and a 15% walk rate. So good ERA, but the rest of it isn't that great. Tobias Myers was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. So Xavion Curry, Dan Hammer in that Mets bullpen, replacing Austin Warren, who was doing fine prior to the injury.
Yeah, he's struggled recently, but up until then, yeah, the stuff looked great from Warren, and he was fine in that like middle relief, you know, not really a high leverage role. We've seen so many guys in this Mets bowl, like Curry, Hammer. They just, I forget who the guy was that they was up for one day and they DFA'd. There's been so many different guys. What's going on with Ryan Lambert is what I want to know.
Matt Selinger.
Yeah. Ryan Lambert was like such a big deal this spring. Okay. His walk rate's terrible at AAA. But yeah, that's unfortunate. Cause yeah, Ryan Lambert looked awesome in spring and you know, the stuff's legit, but yeah, that walk rate is not going to work. So, I don't know. The Mets are just, it's kind of that last relief spot's been a revolving door of
mm-hmm.
random people, and at least their top five's set and pretty good for now until they move some of them at the deadline. But there's, I don't know, nothing really interesting with Curry. I don't know anything about Hammer. He hasn't thrown yet, so we'll see. Maybe there's something there, but Curry.
The numbers weren't promising, but the name is.
Yeah, the name for sure. If he doesn't have a really good curveball as Dan Hammer, I'm going to be upset, but I can't even get a scouting report on him.
Huh.
I don't know.
I don't know
if he was ever really a prospect.
Yeah. Let's revisit it next week and hopefully we get something on Dan Hammer. Let's go to the Twins. And honestly, I've been waiting all week to talk about this move. Not the Marco Raya heading to the 15-day IL with a shoulder impingement. That sort of sucks.
I was excited about this too.
Woo Suk Go. He got traded by the Tigers to the Twins in exchange for cash considerations. And if you're really locked into relievers, you'll remember that Go signed a contract with the Padres back in 2024 as he transitioned from KBO to MLB. He was one of the top closers in KBO, recording at least 30 saves in three consecutive seasons if you discount 2020. And he was doing that as a 20-year-old, 22-year-old, 23-year-old. So really young, high potential reliever, but he came over and just never got a chance in that Padres bullpen. He was just in the minors. He got traded to the Marlins and never got a chance in the majors. And then he pitched for the Tigers. And honestly, this has been a breakout campaign for him this year. 1.96 ERA on the year with a 34% strikeout rate, 8% walk rate, and a 0.82 whip for Woo Suk Go. That's super exciting. And he's entering a Twins bullpen where he'll have plenty of opportunity. So are you just as excited about Woo Suk Go as I am?
I was. Didn't love what I'm seeing. Didn't love what I saw the first outing. But yeah, we'll give him
when
some time.
When was that, today?
He pitched. He did pitch. I'm not making this up. Maybe it was today. Yeah.
Yeah, it was today. Yeah, he allowed a solo home run.
Yeah, and that's fine. The stuff just like didn't, nothing really jumped off the board. I was hoping for a little bit of a better fastball, either shape or velocity or location. And again, one outing from a reliever, so it's hard to really judge. But yeah, mm-hmm. everything else you said, like the opportunity is obviously there. I think the Twins have found two good relievers at least this year, and Morris and Gomez. But you know, outside of that, very wide open. And obviously Go is someone who had, you know, there was interest from a lot of teams that I'm pretty sure the Padres gave him a major league deal, or at least it had potential to be like $1 million contract or something. So
yeah,
but that, yeah, the fastball just didn't really look great. The secondaries were yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll get more outings from him, see how things shape up, but
mm-hmm.
Not excited. I was excited, and then I saw this player card, and I was like, oh, that's not good.
I mean, but it's a mostly flat attack angle. He's got 1.8 HAVA. He throws 94, which is up a mile per hour from his past, and, you know, the shape is fine. I think if he's throwing with that low of an arm angle, I think it's really going to depend on how good the splitter and slider are.
Where? I don't see it. Yeah, his arm angle is low. Okay, yeah. All right, maybe that does.
But that could just be interpolated. I know that arm angles are hard to get right away.
But hopefully the slider was the one that gave up the home run today. But yeah, he was not locating it great. So we'll see. Hopefully they give him a, you know, bit of a little run there. Because
Leash, yeah.
Like there's nothing else going on in Minnesota in that bullpen. So
no.
let's give someone with some sort of upsides a chance.
Yeah, that would be exciting. I definitely was happy to see the numbers in the minor league start looking exciting from Woo Suk Go. He's still only 27. Let's go to the Nationals bullpen, and they were very busy this past week. They placed Brad Lord on the 15-day IL with side tightness. Not great, but Lord has struggled recently. He was definitely good earlier in the season, but they've continued to use him in a long relief role and even opening games, and not going well for Brad Lord. But they did acquire a couple guys via trade. Nothing crazy. They got Kyle Nicholas in a trade with the Orioles in exchange for shortstop Randall Diaz. And they got Tom Cosgrove in a trade with the Astros in exchange for cash considerations. We also saw a brief cameo from Eddie Yean, who was selected from the minors. He's a 25-year-old righty. And at AAA, he's had a 3.51 ERA, a 1.12 whip, a 27% strikeout rate, and an 11% walk rate. But he's back in the minors, and even his replacement is back in the minors too. It looks like they're choosing Matt Crook over everybody, like Cole Henry and Zach Kent. But yeah, I don't know. Do you have any take on Eddie Yean? And do you think Kyle Nicholas can maybe factor into this bullpen at some point?
Yeah. I mean, those guys have more upside than at least, you know, 80% of this bullpen or 60% of this bullpen. So, you know, I think there's something there, Beater and Ribalta, and outside of that, I mean, maybe Riley Cornelio, he's not really close to being relevant yet, but it's still a brutal bullpen. But hopefully, at least in the second half, if they're not going to make moves to get better, you know, significant moves to get better, hopefully at least we see guys like Nicholas and Yean up for longer periods, because, you know, at least develop someone that has some sort of, you know, upside to work with.
Mm-hmm.
That would at least, you know, give us some hope for next year maybe. But yeah, it's really a bleak outlook still for that bullpen. But yeah, Nicholas has shown, and Yean has some stuff too, so yeah, we'll see. There's some guys in AAA that could potentially, if things work out, make some noise there, but who knows?
It's definitely the bullpen to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, and sticking in the NL East, our second to last injury, John King was placed on the 15-day IL with an ankle sprain. Ryan Gusto was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. He's going to be likely pitching in long relief or in the rotation. But with John King out, that's a lot of pressure to put on Cade Gibson, who hasn't really been that great this year. John King was very good, 2.48 ERA prior to the injury, and hopefully he's back to full strength after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I think I forget who it was. Some beat writer or insider said that Aroldis Chapman to the Marlins is like the most, makes the most sense for a landing spot for Chapman. I think it was
poor Pete Fairbanks.
Yeah, it could bump Pete Fairbanks, but also just the fact that they could use a lefty there. It's just weird because Chapman is left-handed, but that's, you know, he's not like a lefty. He's not John King. He's a closer or like eighth inning guy. You know, he's not really matchup dependent. But either way, a lefty could still help. But yeah, they're, you know, bullpen, when healthy, this bullpen is really, really deep and interesting from a stuff perspective, you know, potential high upside perspective. But they, yeah, at this point with these injuries mounting, I think they could use some outside help. And they're playing well outside of, you know, the bullpen. It's been, you know, the rotation's there, the lineup's been working. So yeah, hopefully they make some moves and shore up the bullpen and then get guys like Bender and, you know, maybe Nardi comes back, maybe Eknis comes back. So there's some life there.
Yeah. Pete Bendix is cooking right now for that Marlins bullpen. The last IL placement we have is Tim Herron, who was placed on the 15-day IL by the Guardians with an elbow contusion. Cody Hoyer was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. But I was more excited about one of the lesser known moves that happened prior, as Franco, Alemán. I looked that one up. Franco Alemán was recalled from the minors. He's a 26-year-old righty, and he's been lights out at AAA. 0.32 ERA, 0.53 WHIP, a 43% strikeout rate, and a 7% walk rate. Unfortunately, Daniel Espino was optioned to the minors in the corresponding move. He's definitely got some potential as a reliever in the bullpen. Just a, you know, too many riches in that Guardians bullpen. It's crazy. But what do you think of Alemán? I mean, he's definitely looking legit in the minor leagues. And have we seen him pitch in the majors yet? We have three times.
Yes. And I know, yeah, I don't know. Again, it's a hard bullpen to kind of crack into high leverage spots. But yeah, and even I think he was up earlier in the year too. And yeah, the stuff's off the charts. Finding some consistency with a role there. And honestly, Sean Armstrong has been terrible. So I think there's probably some room to move up slowly in that bullpen. And, you know, who knows if Colin Holderman and if that lasts for another half a season. So yeah, I'm between Espino and Alemán, there's a lot of just sneaky upside still in that Guardians bullpen behind the big names that we're used to.
Right. Yeah, definitely a bullpen that has some sustainability for future success. So that's all the injuries. A bit of news on Ben Joyce. He began a rehab assignment on Tuesday a couple days ago as he's recovering from labrum surgery. I'm not going to hold my breath until he comes back because it could still be a while. But good news on Ben Joyce. So that was a lot of transactions and injuries. We're going to have to be quick on the 3-up, 3-down section and the all-star relievers. But we're going to take a quick break before we get into that. And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen, discussing some closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks, which you can find over at pitcherlist.com. Let's start with the risers. Trevor McGill has been pitching very well for the Brewers. Anything that you're seeing from him that has you more confident in him, or is it more so a case of the relievers around him falling down the ranks?
Yeah, kind of that. And just the fact that McGill continues to stack good performances, and I don't think we should be concerned the fact that he didn't pitch today. There was a four-run game, but Uribe got the ninth again. Kind of weird because McGill hadn't pitched since Tuesday, I think, or Monday or Tuesday. So, but maybe they just want him to get some extra rest heading into the All-Star break. But yeah, I mean, his stuff's been looking better. The velo's been slowly creeping up. Strikeout stuff's been elite. So yeah, he's, you know, if he had been doing this since May, he'd probably be in the like top tier for me. But it's, yeah, we'll take it, be a little cautious with him because, you know, he can get, there's an injury history.
Right.
And there's also been, you know, he's had issues with command and letting up some hard contact in the past. So, and Abner Uribe has been pitching better too lately. So it's not just in McGill. Like I'm liked what I've seen from Uribe lately. So yeah, that bullpen in general has been, you know, rounding into form nicely.
Right. There is competition for Trevor McGill in that Brewers bullpen. Next, we got David Bednar, who continues to pitch well for the Yankees. Sub-3 ERA, 29% strikeout rate. Is there anything else from Bednar? Has it just been the consistency over the past month that has you moving him up?
Yeah, the consistency. The change has been that he's throwing his splitter more and his curveball less. And
okay,
it's working for now. But it's again, he and like Iglesias, to me, like in a similar boat where they're just going to have to change their pitch mix and keep hitters off guard. And especially since Bednar's still not throwing, his velocity is still down a mile per hour from last year. It hasn't really gotten back to where it used to be. So he's working around that, but it's working. You know, that splitter is probably his best. That is his best pitch. So throwing that more and, you know, using the curveball differently and, you know, sparingly has worked for him. So hopefully that continues, or if he needs to make another change, he's able to make it down the road.
Our last riser is Caleb Killian. As you know, there's just no competition in that Giants bullpen. He's going to get all the saves moving forward, if there are any to get. But yeah, he's not been spectacular, but nobody's better than him, and he's just going to keep getting all the saves, and that makes him worth rostering. It just might be tough to swallow the ratios that come with it.
It's going to be you're going to have a couple rough outings with him. But then you're going to have, you know, he has a couple outings where it's like, you know, three strikeouts and a save, or, you know, it's very, there's going to be ups and downs. But when you look at like the bottom, you know, 16 through 25, 30 relievers, that range or closers, it's either guys who are very inconsistent and there's, you know, there's challengers in their bullpen, or guys who are potentially going to be traded at the deadline. And like Killian's got no competition and he's going to be staying in San Francisco. So it's not the funnest, you know, guy to roster, because he's going to hurt your ratios every now and then. But he's got a role, and it's probably going to be his role for the rest of the year, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't expect him to be traded. And if anybody is traded, that only solidifies Killian's role. Yeah. As those guys rise up the ranks, others need to fall to accommodate them. Let's start with our first faller, who's Alex Lange, who, I mean, God, Matt Quatraro has become my public enemy number one. He's just, I mean, the management of the team in general, I guess, is fine. I don't know what he does with the lineup or how he uses his starters, but the bullpen has just been a disaster. I mean, yeah, Carlos Estevez is gone. That's really shaken things up, but you relied on Lucas Erceg for way too long. You sort of played with Daniel Lynch, where he was performing really well and you didn't give him the roles when he needed to. And now Alex Lange is in the closer role. And you know what? Quatraro said, what if we didn't use him in the closer role? And what if when he's not in the closer role, he was really bad and we recognized that and we just kept doing that? Alex Lange pitched in the eighth inning in a tie game in his last appearance. He allowed 5 runs. That was his 5th loss of the season. And the last 4 times that Alex Lange has pitched in non-save situations, he's allowed a run. He's totaled 13 runs allowed in those 4 appearances. And outside of that, in 8 save opportunities, he's had just 7 base runners with no runs allowed. I mean, it's night and day for Alex Lange. When he's pitching as the closer, he can't be touched. When he's pitching as a not closer, he's terrible. And it's just really frustrating when I'm getting minus 15 points in my home league. When I'm trying to, yeah, it's because this affected me personally. Yeah. But yeah, it's super frustrating to see Lange pitch in those non-save situations and blow up. And then when he pitches in save situations, he's great. So Are you moving him down just because we don't know how Quatraro is going to use him? Because I don't think we can blame, I mean, obviously Lang's the one who's pitching in those situations, but I wouldn't think that he'd be allowing 5 runs if he was pitching in a safe situation.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, to his, yeah, I don't even know. Do we know what was going to happen if Lang did get through that out and clean? Who was going to get the 9th inning? I want to say
Schreiber.
Was it Schreiber?
I guess maybe Erceg. I don't know.
Why do I think it was like, I feel like he wants to go back to Erceg for some reason, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Cause he has not been pitching better. Maybe the basic numbers look like Urcic's been pitching better, but he's not been pitching better.
Right. And Schreiber's fallen off a cliff after you were saying that he was the best reliever on that team.
Yeah, I don't think there is a good reliever on this bullpen. No. I think that's part of the issue is, honestly, I wish, like, my guys, I still like Steven Cruz. He has a home run issue for sure. But outside of the home run problems, I like Cruz has been good since, you know, for last month or so. Schreiber had that one bad outing. Outside of that, he's still been fine. It's just not exciting, and he's going to get traded anyway. Strom and Schreiber won't be there probably at the end of the month. So you're going to be looking at it's going to be Lynch and Lang and Steven Cruz and Urcig. And it's just it's all gross, but one of those guys is probably going to get saves. I just don't know if it's going to be Lang, and I'm not holding my breath. I'm not going to, you know, if you can, you don't just don't drop them for nothing. But if there's, you know, there's other interesting options out there, like even like a Mason Montgomery, I might take a spec ad over Lang at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about before the podcast just how terrible the Royals player development is in general, or has been for the last 20 years or so, but the pitching development has just been just terrible. I mean, they just can't find anybody that's worked out. It's like Chris Bubich has been the only guy, and it was one season. So it's tough if you're rooting for the Royals. It's tough if you're trying to rely on their pitchers in fantasy as well. So I'm still holding Alex Lang, but man, if Matt Quatraro does that again and Alex Lang blows up, I'm gonna have to send him a strongly worded letter. Let's go to the Pirates bullpen, where Gregory Soto is falling down your ranks. He's really struggled after a really hot first 2.5 months. It's just been downhill from there, and the Pirates haven't had a lot of save opportunities, so it's hard to know who's the closer right now, but it may not be Gregory Soto because he struggled so much.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it's like a weird situation where Soto has struggled, and it looks like it appears very clearly that he's not the closer at this point, but I don't know who is or who would be because everyone else has been struggling. And again, Mason Montgomery, at least the past week, has looked better. And again, like at some point this year, like I've been talking about, I mean, at some point we expected Montgomery to take over the closer role. I don't know if I expected it to be after he had a pretty bad month of June. But I guess if Soto is also struggling, maybe now is the time to just make that switch. And again, that team is kind of heading in the wrong direction at this point. So yeah, I think, you know, Soto at best is in a committee. I think he pitched the eighth inning recently. I mean, he hasn't really gotten a save chance. No one's gotten a save chance recently for them, so it's hard to tell. But yeah, we keep seeing guys like Santana and Johan Ramirez come in after Soto in games, so it doesn't feel like Soto's the closer, at least. And yeah, the stuff hasn't been the same as it was in the first month. He still hasn't been terrible. I feel like he could turn things around, but I don't know if the Pirates are going to give him a chance to do that and hang on to the closer. Yeah, they probably will be.
They should trade him, and we may finally get our dreams of Mason Montgomery closing out ball games. That would be very exciting. Lastly, our last faller, Sir Anthony Dominguez. It's just out of nowhere, the White Sox just stopped using him in the closer role. Grant Taylor, Sean Newcomb has gotten saves. And honestly, I think the only one worth rostering right now in traditional leagues is Grant Taylor. And I think he's a must roster, to be honest. The strikeouts and the ratios are great. And if he's going to be getting saves and even some like traditional saves, not like the 2-inning, 3-inning saves that we've seen prior this year, then, I mean, he needs to be rostered everywhere, especially if the team is down on Dominguez. And I think Dominguez has pitched the 6th inning in back-to-back games.
At least back-to-back, maybe even longer. I mean, Dominguez is just so far away from the closer role at this point, which is surprising, but not really.
Yeah, it happened out of nowhere. He wasn't like blowing up or anything. They just were like, well, we got better guys.
And Taylor's had some issues recently too. So but I mean, clearly the writing is on the wall that Taylor stuff's better. At least take a chance with him. I mean, Dominguez is just not the same guy he once was. So I think Taylor is probably the guy. Taylor is the guy you want to roster if anyone in this bullpen. But I still feel like Newcomb and maybe even Hudson factor into some saves here and there. I do think Dominguez is basically out of that committee. Just the pitching, you know, down 5 runs in the 6th inning, like the last couple times, like that's, they don't trust him in big spots anymore. So, I don't know. Yeah. I would, if you have the spot to roster Taylor, great, do it, but definitely don't be rostering Seranthony Domínguez. I think that's right. You can cut bait pretty much anywhere and any holds league, save league, whatever. Just, you don't need Seranthony Domínguez anymore.
Yeah. I've been holding Taylor all year in the pitcherless staff league. So I've felt pretty good with production. Even if it's just three saves, it's working out pretty well, I think.
I'm hoping for a big second half with, I mean, there's some guy like Montgomery.
As long as they keep winning, I'm going to keep having more and more faith in Grant Taylor. Cause at some point they're going to be like, yo, we got it. He's got to be the closer. We got to win these games.
We might have like a big, like, breakout of the, I don't know. They're not too young, some of them, but like, you know, Grant Taylor, Mason Montgomery, Alvis Alvarado, some of these like big time stuff guys, hopefully they can take over the closer role and we'll see what happens.
Next generation.
The next gen of closers. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. All right. That'll wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, our risers were Trevor McGill, David Bednar, and Caleb Killian. And our fallers were Alex Lang, Gregory Soto, and Seranthony Domínguez. Now, as we are 80 minutes in, let's touch on the all-star reliever selections. Right, we'll keep it pretty brief. There's nothing too crazy. I mean, I don't think you really need to analyze these too much, but let's talk about the American League relievers. Brian Baker was selected to the American League all-star team. It was his first all-star selection. Aroldis Chapman will join him on there. It was his ninth all-star selection. He's one of two relievers that were selected to the All-Star game that have made a previous All-Star game. Every other one, the other seven, only what? Have right, right.
Iglesias, I was surprised too. Iglesias has never made an All-Star team.
I was going to say the same.
But Chapman's made nine.
Right, nine All-Star games for Aroldis Chapman. Jacob Latz was also selected. It was his first All-Star game. Cade Smith, surprisingly, his first All-Star game, and Louis Varland selected to the AL reliever team as. It was his first selection as well. Very surprising. I mean, we had other guys predicted for this. I think we had some guys that were sort of long shots, but these were the options. They got it right in the American League, in my opinion.
American League was right. Yeah. They did a good job.
They did. And a lot of first timers there.
But yeah, I get
it. Yeah. I don't think there's anybody. Maybe David Bednar can get in there as a replacement or Josh Hader. But yeah, I think these were the top five relievers in the American League. In the National League, we saw Yoan Duran get his first selection, which that surprises me as well. Raisel Iglesias with his first selection. You look that up. You confirm that?
Yeah, it's Iglesias' first time. That's crazy. The Braves tweeted it. Yeah, right. I don't understand how does he not made an All-Star?
He always has those second half.
I know.
Performances he's always that save his first half. Yeah,
that's crazy.
It's crazy. Though. Right. I thought the same thing. And even Mason Miller, I mean, he hasn't been around for that long, but just two All-Star appearances now. This was his second selection. And then Riley O'Brien was named as a replacement. This is his first All-Star selection. That was pretty surprising because O'Brien's definitely fallen down a lot. Yeah, there are way better options, as you wrote here. No Tanner Scott, no Dylan Lee. I mean, even, you know, Adrian Morejon has been better than Riley O'Brien. He just has a lot of saves. And
this is why,
you
know, I can't.
Why not Trevor McGill? Why not? Why not? You know, there's so many options. That's crazy.
I can't take the All-Star game seriously. Also, like Justin Verlander, that's a whole other thing, but whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
But like,
as long as he's not taking away spots from somebody else.
I mean, O'Brien with a 3.62 ERA and 36 strikeouts on the year. I mean, just like the basic numbers. We can get into why he doesn't deserve it, or I don't want to say deserve it. But like, just like over guys like Tanner Scott and Dylan Lee, man. How is Dylan Lee? Why we care about saves when only one of these guys is going to get a save potentially in the All-Star game? So why are we so caught up on saves when like Dylan Lee has been having such a ridiculously good season? I mean, even Tanner Scott's getting saves and putting up crazy numbers.
Right.
Is it because there's too many Dodgers? They don't want to have, I don't know.
Probably want more Dodgers.
There's not even a lefty in this bullpen right now, too. These are all right-handed relievers. Maybe mix in a lefty.
Silly.
Just
and even if they're gonna do like the replacements too, because O'Brien wasn't replacing another reliever. I know they only selected three relievers initially, but there are starters that deserve a selection over Riley O'Brien well more. Like Zach Wheeler's been incredible.
The NL pitching in general is so much better than the AL. It's so much tougher. I feel like the AL, everything was like, all right, that makes sense. And like the NL, there's so many guys that got left off that probably deserve to be there. So
right. And if we're talking about like arbitrary stats like saves, like Dylan Lee has 19 holds. He's like second in baseball with 19 holds. He's only trailing Jojo Romero. Why can't we give him an opportunity? Why can't he get an all-star save selection just if we're looking at arbitrary numbers? Right. Save plus holds. Even got nearly as many as O'Brien, but yeah, it really just does seem like he got 22 saves and they were just like, okay, that's cool. That's a high number.
I didn't see that until like 2 hours before this. And I had to like, I'm double checking sources. I'm like, what? It says Riley O'Brien's in the All-Star. Like what? Dylan Lee, man.
They must've voted at the end of April or something.
That's the only thing that makes sense. But even still, Dylan Lee was probably better than him in April. I know Riley O'Brien was crazy in April, but like, man, that's really messed up.
Very surprising.
Yeah. I mean,
I think they got the other guys right. I don't think you're selecting guys over Duran and Miller. But I mean, Iglesias is, you know, debatable, but he's been solid this year.
Yeah, I think again, I it depends on what you're looking at. I still think I would definitely take Scott and Lee over O'Brien, and I probably would take both of them over Iglesias. But it would be weird, I guess, if they took Dylan Lee over Iglesias when Iglesias is the one closing there. Right. I don't know. But like, Tanner Scott is another, like, just, you know, whips under. I mean, I guess he only has 13 saves, so that hurts his chances versus Riley O'Brien. I don't know.
Yeah, crazy.
I don't understand the politics behind any of this, but.
Yeah, and I wonder if we'll see any more replacements over the next few days as we head into the All-Star break.
Sure, there will be.
Next week. Yeah, so maybe we'll see Dylan Lee or Tanner Scott get a selection, but those are the really two egregious ones. I don't think there's anybody else where we're screaming at the screens being like, why wasn't this guy selected? Trevor McGill, I think, has a pretty good case too, but he's only got 14 saves. So if we're really going to be driven by saves. Well, now those are your all-stars: Brian Baker, Aroldis Chapman, Jacob Latz, Cade Smith, Louis Varland in the AL, and in the NL, Yoán Duran, Raisel Iglesias, Mason Miller, and Riley O'Brien. So that will wrap it up for a information-packed podcast here, as well. We got through so many names, and the fact that we could have gone probably for 3 more hours if we were allowed to, but I don't think anybody's listening to a 4.5-hour podcast about relievers, though. You know, there are some sickos out there. Yeah, right. But that's going to do it for this episode, number 168 of the In the Pen podcast. Rick, why don't you go ahead and plug your socials and tell everybody what you're working on?
You can find me on socials at I am Rick Graham. I am back to, I think as of now, hopefully back to putting out regular, you know, reliever streamers, reliever roundups each morning, getting the reliever ranks out on Tuesdays again. Been obviously a bit of a different schedule the last week or so, but I think I'm back to being able to do everything on a normal, regular schedule again. Obviously next week's going to be the All-Star break. So it gives us a little bit of a break for, at least me, a break for roundup stuff, but, and streamers. So yeah, but everything else is going to be as normal moving forward in the second half.
All right. Yeah. And you can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. I've been doing a lot of roundups recently as well. SP roundups, as opposed to Rick's reliever roundups. I'm going to be doing a couple of those this weekend and doing the first pitch 4 days a week. Next week, I'll probably be off for a few of the days as we have the All-Star break, but you can also find more of my work over at Baseball HQ, where I do playing time analysis for the Giants, A's, Diamondbacks, and Angels. And you can find all of my work over at crumplerbaseball.com. But that'll do it for this episode number 168 of the In the Pen podcast. We'll talk to you all next week.